Spectrum Business works with small businesses nationwide, so we know that running your own business means doing it all. Marketing, sales, inventory, customer service, and more. Spectrum One for Business helps you keep it all connected for just $49.99 a month. Get fast, reliable internet, advanced Wi-Fi with Security Shield, and a free mobile line for one low price. Stay connected and do it all with Spectrum One for Business. Only $49.99 a month. Go to spectrum.com/business to learn more. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Let's go!
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Bingetown TV. This is Brian here with Jimmy, Paul, and Kathleen. And today, we're going to be talking HBO's new hit series, The Last of Us. This is going to be Season 1, Episode 7, entitled Left Behind. And before we get into it, as always, I'm going to reroute you over to BingetownTV.com. That has our full catalog of shows we've covered. We've done The Boys, The Mandalorian, The Haunting of Hill House, The Haunting of Bly Manor, all the hauntings, all the everything, Peaky Blinders, House of the Dragon. What more do you want? We got them all there at BingetownTV.com. Looking forward to March. March is going to be a big month for us. We do have Mando. We're going to have Yellowjackets Season 2. Shadow and Bone is coming out, and I'm sure most people haven't seen that show. Fucking go out and watch it. I'm taking long on this. In summation, I suppose, what I'm telling you to do is hit subscribe, hit follow wherever you see Bingetown TV. Just subscribe, follow. It's the easiest way you can help us out. And we would really appreciate it. Wow, that was a long way to get to episode 7, Left Behind. And if you made it past that, then you're in for a surprise, because we have two new rookies. They're both rooks to The Last of Us. They haven't played the game, and they are rooks to our podcast coverage. Welcome Paul and Kathleen, who we all thought was dead, but she's back to be on this podcast episode.
I'm happy to be here. I'm the better Kathleen, although I love Melanie Lynskey. But yeah, I've been a sub for the whole season, but haven't been subbed in because we've had a pretty steady crew for Bingetown. But yeah, man, I'm so excited. I love this show. I love this episode. Paul, how about you?
Yeah, same thing. Been sitting on the bench ready to go. Finally got an opportunity to start, so I'm really excited to be here. I mean, we've been watching every episode, talking in the chat with you guys, so it kind of feels like we're even on the pod. But it's great to be here, because this is one of those episodes that I could see being like either the highest rated or the lowest rated. And there's like no middle ground. Like, you know, some people are going to love it or some people are going to hate it. I loved it. I mean, how can you not love Ellie? You guys have been saying it all season. But if you don't like Ellie by now, like, I'm sorry, can't help you, because she's phenomenal.
I know. Bella is doing an exceptional job. And as the queer girly on the pod, I am happy to be here for one of the two queer episodes. If I couldn't be here for episode 3, I'm glad I'm here for episode 7. Because the longing looks and the pining stares, I understand. I understand. Okay? This episode made me like really think through for the first time. I mean, obviously we've been with Ellie this whole time, but having both Ellie and Riley made me really think of like the consequences of having a child in this post-apocalyptic era. And like, what are actually the procedures, the processes, and the thought process of having a child? Is there any kind of like weird, like one child law? Is there anything like that in this universe? You know, they really highlight like how they grow up, what path they choose, or what path is chosen for them, which is really devastating. And just like this episode of them like romping around a mall, which was gorgeous, right? Because 2003, right, even though technically it's 2023, but like 2003 is the last time that this mall was functional, and that would have been peak glorious mall era. And I'm just like, all this that they lost, like they would have they just can't be kids. And it was nice to see them be kids and wait for them to be attacked the entire episode. I was holding my breath. So it was good. It was really good. Sad, but really like thought provoking in a different way than the rest, I thought.
Kyle has been saying it all season. Tommy, what the hell are you doing having a kid and bringing a child into this world?
Selfish. Kyle's been harping on that all season, how irresponsible it is to have kids. So this is proving it.
Continue, Paul.
I mean, that was it. If you want me to start going into the episode, we can. But do you guys have any? I was going to ask you guys as the vets. Obviously, this is, like you said, the DLC. So you didn't necessarily play this.
Yep.
But is there anything alluded to the games? So like would a person who played the games enjoy this episode a lot?
Well, so yeah, I don't know if you want to jump in first, Brian, but I just like Brian, we're rooks for the DLC. Okay. But because it's a DLC and we played one and I played two, I didn't care about spoilers. So I looked up the parallels, and they are just like we've been saying with other episodes, ridiculous. Like they took the specific mall scenes, the lingerie, like Victoria's Secret, the arcade, like all this stuff is like exactly right. The photo booth scene, like right out of the game. It's just the masks, them jumping on the counters before kissing, all of it is all from the game. And it just like I love seeing on TikTok or Reels or whatever, people doing the side-by-side parallels. And they've done it a few times for earlier episodes. And I've even done it on the Bingetown TikTok and YouTube channel for earlier episodes. But because I didn't play the DLC, I didn't want to be a phony and try to do it myself. So watching other people do it, it's been really cool. So yeah, I really appreciated seeing that kind of stuff.
And for me, I've only played The Last of Us 1. I haven't played 2, which, as I understand it, is pretty Ellie-focused as opposed to Joel-focused. So there's a lot of backstory about Ellie that I assume I have just never seen as only a player of The Last of Us 1. So having it all just like spilled out in one episode, it was great. It provided a lot of context of Ellie's character. It showed us the Fedra schooling that she was kind of brought up in, which we've been talking about on the podcast. That was something I was curious to see, and I think it was really well done. I liked what it added to the character. So to answer your question, Paul, as a player of the game, this added a lot of value to me. And it also was bookended by the Joel and Ellie scenes, kind of her taking care of Joel, which as a player of The Last of Us 1, I am fully expecting a very good episode 8 if it is the events of The Last of Us 1.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Don't you tease me, Brian. Don't you dare get me excited.
Ooh, I'm going to tease you. Kathleen, what's up?
Last of Us 1, is it getting pretty much to the end of the game while we're ending the season, or are we like midpoint?
Season ends the game.
Oh, damn. Oh, yep. Fuck.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's actually interesting.
How many seasons they're going to do?
So season one is game one. Then there has been rumors. At first they said season two is game two, part two. But now there's rumors that part two has a lot to delve into. So they might push it and they might spread it out a little bit more. And of course, I'm sure HBO would love that.
Yeah.
So I'm sure they freaking will. And not that it's coming anytime soon, but Neil Druckmann has said that if something comes up and they could tell a great story, part two isn't the end. They'll do a part three game, which would equal season 4, 5, 6, whatever it is for this show.
Nice. Let's get into it.
That would be awesome. Let's get into it. I have gotten into the habit of going over the IMDb ratings, and coincidentally, Paul said this is either going to be one that'll be the best rated or the worst rated. It is the worst rated. It is a 7.6. Episode 3 kind of got review bombed for obvious reasons. This potentially could have that going
on. It did as well. 7.6
does seem pretty low to me, but I will admittedly say it was my least favorite episode of the season just because it wasn't meant to be an action episode. And as much as I loved the two characters that were highlighted, the entire episode, I'm just like, when are they going to get attacked by the zombies? Which made it so uncomfortable for me the entire episode. I was like, oh, these stupid kids, you know, there's a zombie in there. But
so I took it as I understand why people would like you, Brian, this would be your least rated episode. But in the same sense, this episode makes the other episodes so much more meaningful just by having all that background. So yeah, it might stink, but it is necessary. It's like Lily from How I Met Your Mother. She stinks, but she's necessary.
Yeah.
Like Lily.
I do too.
Paul, don't even get me started because we always have arguments in Binge Town. Who hates Lily? Who likes her? Who's indifferent? But we'll get there maybe on a town hall someday. But the interesting thing about this episode is it's kind of like an oxymoron with episode 3, where it got review bombed, a lot of one stars for the obvious reasons that are just ridiculous. So we don't even need to get into that. But some people were trying to, yeah, exactly. But some people were trying to say that 3 was too side questy, side story y, and this episode was too side story E. And my response to that is funny, where I'm saying it's an oxymoron is technically I actually liked 3 the best of the season, probably. And I like 3 better than this episode. But I would almost agree that 3 has the least to do with the entire story. But this episode, okay, has a lot to do with the story. This isn't 2 of the side characters, you know, meeting and falling in love and this and that. This is explaining all of why Ellie has her certain personality traits, what she's dealt with. It gives Joel a huge L for the conversation that he had with her, saying she doesn't know anything about loss. The dynamic between her and Riley and showing it to us was amazing, because now we know exactly the kind of loss Ellie's had and why she acts the way she does towards Joel. And it, like you said, Brian, bookends right into her going back to Joel, freaking out, being like, I got to find the stitches, or I got to find whatever I need to find, gets it, and just starts stitching them up. Just she has to bring him back to life.
Do you think that the person Ellie talks about having killed is Storm Reed's character, Riley?
So me, Brian, and Dave and Kyle talked about this, and we were saying the what ifs. I think we all kind of agreed that it was probably going to be Riley. Now think about how devastating it is that, and we can get to this later, but you have the girl you love. Okay. You just kiss her for the first time. And you all remember what it's like to be 14, 15, 16 or whatever, when you're like, oh my God, I'm in love, man. You know? And then you find out that you're both bit, and you're thinking it's like poetically, like she said, you're going to go mad together and die together. And then you just sit there and wait while she does, but you don't. And then I guess you have to get rid of her, because otherwise she's going to get rid of you. I don't know if they're going to do another flashback. I would like to see how that ends.
Ugh, devastating. Devastating.
And to answer your question, do you think Riley was the person she was referring to? She could have been referring to the clicker that she stabbed in the head. She could count that as a quote unquote kill too. We know she's tough. I would be shocked if she had it in her to like put a knife through Riley. That's a lot to put on a 14-year-old.
My other guess was Marlene comes to like check up, and Marlene is the one who does it and puts it, that's where she puts Ellie into lockup, and that's you know probably all within the next fucking 12 to 24 hours that all happens.
Yeah, it's gotta be.
I mean, what's his name was turned within what, like 6 to 8? He was a small little man, though. He was a small little baby. Anyway, let's rock it.
All right. So this episode actually opens up with the winds howling, the birds calling, and Joel screaming. He's lying down.
Is that the subtitles, or are you just saying that?
No, yeah, it was 100% the subtitles. It was like wind howls, birds call, and then Joel screams. And I was like, okay, that's cool. He is obviously not in good shape. We see that they were able to at least make it to this house, this hut, wherever it was. They still have the horse. They did show it there in one scene real quick. I was glad they did. And then, of course, we get Joel dying on the ground. Ellie can't do anything, And it quickly escalates to Joel saying, hey, you leave. You go back to Tommy. Get out of here right now. To the point where he's grabbing and shoving her back just to force her to go. She's screaming, Joel, shut the fuck up. But he doesn't care. He shoves her away. And, you know, we get a flashback before we know it. So anything of this opening scene. And it's funny because I was going to ask you guys, like, why do you think they chose this scene to have the flashback? And this like exact moment. And I guess we should wait to the end of the episode to like fully answer it after we've talked about everything. Well, that's a good question for you guys. Good question for you guys to think about while we talk.
Let that stir up while we're talking.
Yeah, all right. So we flash back immediately to the Federal School. She's run around the gym, and this young lady whose name we find out to be Bethany rips the headphones off. We learn that Ellie don't take no shit, punches her, and of course she's in the captain's office before we know it. Just like little things that this show is amazing about is like they have this conversation like, you don't fight, your friend fights, and she isn't here. And what's nice about this show is they make conversation so realistic, because they didn't make Ellie go, give my headphones back, Bethany. Like, she didn't say her name there. She talks like a normal person. And, you know, Bethany wasn't like, your friend Riley isn't here. Like, they waited until next scene and let us put one and two together and kept the conversation a real world conversation.
Yeah.
So it's something small, but I just appreciate it so much, because I hate when shows do that and spoon feed it to you.
Yeah, that's probably the thing that this show just does so well from top to bottom, is just the effort that they put into the conversational dialogue that objectively doesn't really mean that much. But like, if you're watching the show from our perspective, it just means so much.
Yeah, we've been saying since episode one, and it's been like this, at least most shows that have been recent with the zombie, even though that's the bad word for this show, but the zombie apocalypse type show, Walking Dead or World War Z. We've been saying it's more about the people, more about the relationships, the conversations. So, Paul, that's like you're saying, you can tell that that's where they're putting a lot of their effort, even though they've been doing great with everything. But just showing, just specifically having episodes like 3 and 7 or 7, right? Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Correct? Yes. Yep. We good? All right. 3 and 7. Prove that they're not worried about rearing off the zombie or infected storyline and giving us stories about people.
I'd say there's been more episodes without infected or very little infected than there are that highlights the infected. So 100% what you're saying. But let's continue with the episode, because I feel like this conversation with the captain, he was a real one. I kind of really like this conversation. And it was an adult who identified Ellie's kind of leadership instincts before Joel and stuff like that, which I just thought was really cool that there was an adult that took this vested interest in her beforehand.
You're so smart. You're so smart. You're stupid. Is what he says to her. And he's like, yeah, normal disciplinary actions won't work against you. So I'm going to try something new. I'm going to tell you the truth. He breaks it down. You know, path one, you have a grunt's life, right? You eat shit food, you do shit jobs. You take shit from losers like Bethany. You take orders from people like Bethany.
That's where
God,
you want
that
her,
sounds
dude.
Awful. Option two, you know, you get the keys. You become an officer. You're cool in the summer, warmer in the winter. Basically, as good as you can ask for in this world. And it's interesting that Ellie was looking at the picture of Kwong's wife and daughter beforehand, because I think that totally, like, that's a perfect example of what Kwong is. He even says it right here. He says, you know, the world would fall apart if we weren't here. We're holding this thing together. No matter what anybody says, Fedra is actually pretty good. So he's doing, Kwong, in his eyes, he's doing everything he can to keep the world from falling apart for his family. And like, that's almost the type of two people you see in Fedra, like either like, you know, people that want to make it good for their family or like total pieces of shit, like the dude from episode one. But what I was getting at here is this pretty much sums up Ellie's viewpoint throughout the entire episode that she has with Riley. You know, through the episode, Riley's, you know, here's the good things about the Fireflies, and Ellie saying here's the good things about Fedra. And I feel like Quang is the perfect example of all the good things that Fedra could be.
Mm-hmm. Seems like to a point, though, all of Riley and Ellie's conversations and pillow talks and such were about liberating it, right? Like they were almost on the firelights or fireflies.
Fireflies. The firelights is arcane.
Okay.
Let's go.
Yeah.
We cover arcane. Go check it out. So the fireflies, it seems like their conversations were more on their side, right? But then once Ellie has this conversation and learns that Riley's actually going to join it, she's like, whoa, 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 pump the fucking brakes here, okay? So it's interesting that Ellie has such a visceral reaction to it. Like, because if it was a day before she had that conversation with Quang, I wonder if it would have been the same reaction. Well, either way, like she's running away to go do dangerous things. So Ellie would have been scared and, you know, et cetera.
It's also fantastic, the timing of this episode, because you were talking about liberation and the past, well, not the last episode, but the two prior, we saw an example of what a liberated city looks like in Kansas City. And while I don't think they gave us reason to believe Kathleen was associated with the Firefly, so maybe their liberation could look better, left to their own devices, regular civilians will just devolve into chaos in these circumstances. So yeah, I'm kind of on Quan's side that Fedra is holding it together, but it's kind of like politics in real life, you know? The idea of it is fantastic, but you have horrible people that are getting into politics that are calling the shots and running the show. So naturally, they're going to abuse the power that they're given. But it puts some weight on him identifying her, because clearly he wouldn't kind of he wouldn't encourage a shitty person to pursue a leadership role in Fedra. He's like, yeah, he's like the Bethany's of the world. That's not you. Like, you have potential. It was just a great scene.
Yeah, he has good intentions and identified the good intentions and potential within her, which was good. But yeah, well,
yeah, in my opinion, it makes it way harder, because now you're like, fuck, I thought it was clear cut, you know, rooting for the Fireflies. Now it's like, you know, is Fedra, like, Fedra's not as bad as they made it out to be. You know, it's
literally
two sides
like
of the same coin.
Exactly. It's like most shows where there's two sides, when it's like that, where there's good and bad people on each side. Which one are you going to see in the show? Which ones are going to affect our main characters? I mean, moving ahead, get to your point, Kathleen, when Riley shows up, she comes through the window, scares the shit out of Ellie, and says, like, sorry, bro, I thought you were going to enjoy that. Which I don't know where the hell that would have came from. And Ellie's like, Jesus Christ. But anyway, like, Ellie does say, Yo, like, it's one thing to just like have dreams and talk about it when we're laying in bed at night. And it's another thing to have a handgun in your waist pot in your like in your waistband right now, telling me you're about to liberate the city.
So I do want to add, Kathleen, you were kind of touching on it earlier. Do you think her tone in a conversation like this would have been different like 2 days prior had she not had the conversation with the captain? Like, do you
think
that conversation changed everything?
It's hard to tell. We only have Ellie in the first 5 minutes before that conversation. And again, she seems like a rebel, a little troublemaker. We know her as that, but she seems like kind of aimless. They threw her in the hole a couple times in the past 2 weeks. Right. And we know Riley's been gone for the last few weeks. So that's probably why she was acting up so much and getting thrown in the hole. So I don't know. I that's my question. I guess we won't know. But I guess my thing is, Paul said I was rooting for the Fireflies. It seemed kind of clear cut. But to me, it didn't seem clear cut, because I'm watching all seven of these and I'm like, none of this seems cool. All of it sucks. And when we get to the end and talk about like what Riley was assigned to, like, I thought that was a good little twist of why she is doing what she's doing, right? It's not just because she was, like, approached and she just decided on a dime to change. It was because this Fedra, you know, they decided her life for her. This is what you're going to do, your own sewage duty. Like, that's so bad. And you have to choose another path. But, yeah, literally. So, I don't know. But it's something to think about, I think.
Oh, totally.
No, I agree 100%, Kathleen. I do think that from the beginning, it wasn't easy to figure out what side. I know, like you said, Paul, that you were saying clear cut. I think that certain viewpoints would make it seem like clear cut would be the answer, just because it's just like, oh, fight the power, and then we have the Fireflies, and we know that our main characters have technically taken a mission from Marlene, who doesn't seem like a bad person, and this and that. And in the beginning, Fedra looks definitely like they're a problem for us. The Hunters kind of screw that up when Kathleen isn't a Fedra agent, so she's liberating Fedra, and it's like, who was good and bad in that situation? Apparently, Fedras were awful pieces of shit. The Hunters don't seem that great either when they have snowplows with spikes coming out of them saying run. But yeah, it's just like Brian said, the whole city devolves. It's just like POS is left and right, and you just have to find the bright spots on either side. And our girl Ellie was a bright spot on whatever side she was going to pick. And with Riley and Ellie here, I do think it's an interesting conversation. And I don't know about you guys. So for me, because I played the game, and I'm pretty sure me, Brian, Dave, and Kyle did discuss this, like, Ellie does talk about it in a way, like Kathleen and Paul, you assumed Riley was dead, right? And this is just a flashback before she dies. Like, you knew that or you didn't?
I assumed, yeah, she's dead.
I'm not saying no for sure, because obviously you're rooks, but basically what I'm getting at is when this episode started, because I had that preconceived notion of Riley being dead, I assumed that the part where she's got her headphones on and she's running, she's upset because that already happened. But that was kind of stupid of me, because she would have already been bitten, and then that would have, yeah, it was stupid of me. And now that I'm like talking it out with you guys, but for a second,
they team up
I was
for
like,
it though.
Yeah, I'm seeing, all right, she's running, she's sad. Bethany says, oh, your friend's not here to, you know, she used to be the fighter. Then she gets in her room and the bed's empty and she's all sad and blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking, oh, she's dead. It's already been done. Again, they got me, because it shouldn't have been that way, because you would know that her sleeve is wide open, her arm is being shown, and she would have been bitten. So that was stupid of me. But for a second, I thought Bethany was coming in that goddamn window to beat her ass. After, you know, like, you know, have her posse beat her ass after the beat down from earlier.
15, but with 15 stitches in her face.
Yeah, right.
Nah, she wouldn't be able to do that. But no, I totally agree. They did kind of set you up, especially people that are not watching. Like, we know that Riley's dead, but we don't necessarily know that Riley and Ellie getting bit were in the same scenario. So me and Emily are watching and we're like, oh, okay. You know, like you said, we see the empty bed. We see her sad reading her Savage Starlight and no pun intended books. We even get Kwong saying, you've been acting out more than normal the past 2 weeks. So we thought she was dead. But of course, this is the scene, you know, after lights out. We do scan the room, get the aha tape, which is nice because
come on,
we all know what song's
anybody
coming
else hear
up
that song and start crying a little bit later.
Yeah, we get a Mortal Kombat 2 poster, which is hysterical because, like, why do they have that? They probably just get whatever they can and put it on the wall. Because that's what's available. And then, yeah, next thing you know, she's being woken up by Riley sneaking back in, screaming, Riley, what are you doing here? Like, of course, volume a little bit. I was thinking that the whole episode, right? Volume.
Too.
And Riley is like, yo, shush, shush, shush. And yeah, of course, this is the line where it's like, it was a joke. I thought it would go better. In my mind, you loved it. You know, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Long conversation short, I became a Firefly. Come have the night of your life with me.
Yeah.
So what
you're gonna say no, then you're gonna say yes. So let's say yes.
I like they immediately like I get the friendship. It's right on screen. Yeah. I'm like, it's so nice to see someone like Ellie with someone her age. I know she's a few years older, but like Sammy was cute, but he was too. His name is Sammy, right?
Sam. Yeah.
Henry okay. Sammy. That's for Brian. That's for Brian. We cover Yellow Jackets. But anyway. When they are running around on top of buildings, I've obviously never played the game, but I was like, this is a video game. Like,
yeah, it's
hopping
gameplay.
Buildings. Like, no one's ever hopping buildings in real life unless you're like Daredevil, et cetera. You know what I mean? So yeah. I was like, this is
or
cool.
Marshall Erickson.
Hell yeah. I could jump that far.
Be building hops. Got to get to that
words,
hot tub, baby.
Five words you're going to regret. We should buy a bar. I could jump that far.
Quick line read I loved is when, you know, Riley's talking to Allie about maybe the answer isn't just like violence all the time. Like you can't just like fight your way, pick your battles. And then they start talking about Carol and how Riley beat her up or whatever and puts like sent her to the infirmary. And when Bella's line read of them just saying, fucking Carol, I cracked up. I was like, it reminded me of like fucking guy, like, you know, so good.
Yeah. Fuck Carol. Fucking Carol.
Yeah, fuck Carol. Also, one more thing, if I'm just going to keep rocking, as they get into the building, they get to the mall. It's like seven stories up. They're dying. And the guy's dead there. Is that Sarah Thompson's boyfriend? Are we supposed to think it's him?
No.
Okay. Meaning like
he's just the guy who went there to kill himself pretty much.
Also, while we're on that scene, do these girls not know the world that they're living in, that they're just like prancing around a dead body that looks really fresh? She like literally leaned over him to grab the bottle on the other side rather than walk. I'm like, come on, girls.
At any time, yeah, like they could have just made this episode 10 minutes and just had her get bit right there.
Well, that's why it's so good. It's all intentional.
That's
it
what
has
they're
to
doing.
Be because
oh, yeah. Oh,
everybody
yeah.
knows the conclusion, probably, like we just said, is Riley's going to die at the end of this episode and Ellie is going to get her bite at some point in this episode. And we're all just waiting for it from 10 minutes to when it actually happens. So just good storytelling.
Emily and I are watching and we're thinking the same thing. We're like, what are you doing? That guy is probably infected and you're drinking from the same bottle. You're just skipping the bite. You're just skipping the middleman and going, hey, why don't you just give me your spit? So I was actually thinking, I was like, oh my God, is this how they're going to turn? They're going to drink this alcohol and then they're going to get infected. And I was like, wait, no, Ellie had a bite, blah, blah, blah. But I was waiting for them like to something bad to happen. You guys know about germs, right? You're fucking old enough.
Yeah, right. They don't care about germs. They only care about flour, apparently.
Yeah.
Edgar didn't teach him about germs, dude.
No way. He was like pretty decrepit for him to not have been there yesterday, like Riley said. It was a little confusing for me that he was there.
He was like bloodless.
Pretty fresh
like
still?
There like he was yeah,
I don't
like
know
he was
what
white
a dead body.
Yeah, I don't
like
know what he's supposed to look like, but
me neither.
You know, that just goes to the point, though, where, you know, Riley's like, hey, you know, I have a surprise for you. Follow me. Trust me with your life. And all of a sudden, part one is, oh, shit, there's a dead guy right here. Should we continue? Oh, hell yeah, we're going to continue. All right, let's go. And then they start cracking up when he falls through the floor. It's like, damn, you guys are a little crazy, little badasses. Which one you want?
Well, both. Ellie's reaction wasn't scared. She was like, oh, is this it? This is what you were showing me? That's what her reaction was. She was like pumped about it.
Is this a surprise?
That was a surprise.
Do they tell us at any point how long Riley had been gone prior to
3 weeks?
To this
two
night?
Weeks? Three.
I think three.
It was
2 weeks. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably a long time.
Kwong said you've been acting out more than normal like the past 2 weeks. And we
And then during the fight in the very beginning, she's like, you've been gone for however many weeks. Like, you know, I forget the number. It's two or three. Yeah.
Well, we're back in talking about that. I loved the little line where Ellie's getting ready, and this is the iconic red Ellie sweatshirt, is it not? Like, as soon as she puts that stuff on before they leave the dorm, I'm like, that's Ellie from the games. Like, this is the outfit she wears with Joel. Like, this is as iconic Ellie as it gets. So are you guys getting that? Or is I just completely wrong? Because she's in that red sweatshirt the whole game, right? The zip up.
That's one of her zip ups. Yeah, I mean they do change, I think, here and there. Like we were talking about some other outfits that she was wearing. They went with Sarah's exact outfit from the pre part of episode one and the video game part one, stuff like that. But yeah, I mean that's basically how she looks all game. So.
It was awesome.
Red,
it's really
red
more maroon than red, if I'm being honest.
Is it claret? Is it claret?
Well, if you're a hammer.
Oh.
Which I'm cool. not.
But the other thing I was going to say is when Ellie goes, you know, turn around while I get changed. This was the first instance where I was like, oh, okay. You care because you like her. You have a crush. Mm,
yeah.
You like Lois. So that was like the first inclination where I was like, all right, this might be more than just friendship.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they get the bottle, go past the dead bodies. holds Riley's gun real quick. Another conversation about, like, you know, why'd you join the terrorist group, blah, blah, blah. And then this is where she tells Ellie about Marlene. She doesn't say the name. She just says some old woman, 30s or 40s, maybe old. And I was like, oh, God damn.
Yeah. Damn.
I'm getting there.
I guess that's me.
So this is where another, you know, divide comes in. You know, what's her name? Riley. Riley says Fedra is a bunch of fascist dick bags. So, okay, you're into Fireflies. And this is the first time Ellie's like, I don't know, man. In a way, Fedra is kind of holding everything together. This is one conversation that is kind of going to happen a few more times throughout the episode.
Acting like she drew that conclusion all on her own.
Yeah, right.
After
Kwan, didn't have any help.
Yeah.
Took her all of 1 hour that you just learned about.
Yeah,
2 hours ago.
I kind of thought that.
So we also learned that there are more lights going up because there's more people in the QZ. You know, see, Fedra isn't that bad. You know, blah blah blah. Plus, we learned that Fireflies bombed the supply depot. Again, just we're seeing that both sides are a little good here and a little bit bad there. And Riley finally reveals where they've been going this whole time. It's the mall. Oh my God, that place has been sealed off because it's full of infected. If it's sealed off, then why isn't it sealed off?
It's still so slimy and scary, man, in there. I just am not going into a gigantic building.
The mall. Today.
Somebody, How I Met Your Mother references.
Oh, I love it. They're abundant around here, man.
Last episode, it was the other guys. In this episode, it's How I Met Your Mother. We're just picking random shit and quoting
it. Cyclical, man.
But the shot of the lights coming on in the mall was gorgeous. I mean, such a good shot. And I needed a Take On Me montage. I really did. Like, I needed like if you recall in Stranger Things when Max and Eleven go on their little mall montage. I needed I needed that with Take On Me in the background. But it was still good enough just to hear. I don't think they utilized it well enough, but it was still good to hear. I mean, you know us. We are the biggest fans of Take On Me in the whole world. So
it's great. And if you're a listener that was like me, or I'm sorry, if you're a viewer that was like me, the first thing you're thinking is like, holy shit, why not just shoot a flare gun in the sky to let everybody know you're here?
Yeah.
But Riley does say apparently the whole place is boarded up, so it's like a bunker. Nobody outside.
I am so happy they said that. I was writing that note in full capitals with underlines 15 times. Holy shit, you just said you just easily got yourself busted.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad to do, because I was about to be furious. I had notes, but now I have no notes.
Cover that plot hole real quick. Good stuff.
All the takes is a line.
Boarded that plot hole right up, man.
Yeah, meanwhile, Star Wars had to wait 3 decades and have a spinoff movie to cover up their plot hole. sorry, I was going off there.
Star Wars
but
shade.
We realize that Riley has a plan. She's going to show Ellie the four wonders of the mall. Cue Take On Me. They get to the electric stairs. No, it's an escalator. Is this the first wonder? Yeah, sure. We can make it 5 wonders. just so fun. Wonder number 2, merry-go-round. And like it lights up, and she's like, "Oh, this is cool." And then it starts moving, and she's like, "What?" And loses her mind. Like it's easy to take these things for granted. Meanwhile, Ellie's never even seen a car. Like she thinks that's a spaceship. Yep. You guys have been talking about that.
This would be like the funnest date ever in today's climate. But imagine this would be Ellie's best day of her entire life. The perfect date, like all alone in a mall, seeing all this for the first time, like. What an amazing experience. Oh, my gosh. I thought I was just waiting for an infected to run out during the carousel scene the entire time.
Me too. Yeah. The merry-go-round, the photo booth, like the photo booths are peak. Are they going to kiss? Will they? Won't they?
Yeah.
Moments.
Yeah.
And it's all so sweet and so innocent when they walk by the Victoria's Secret. And when Riley was laughing, it was like, I was just trying to picture you wearing something like that. And it just being like, it was innocent. But at the same time, Ellie was like, wait.
Why are you thinking of me?
Why are you thinking of me in that? Glass, fixing her hair and everything.
It's perfect. Yeah. But
that's how you flirt when you're like that age. Too, like a young teenager, you'd be like, oh my God, you're so stupid. I'm like, oh my God.
So was it just me and I'm giving the show more credit than it deserves? Or could you guys like tell the two of them kind of loosening up and losing their inhibitions? Like every time they took a swig of the alcohol and stuff, like I just thought it was such a good progression. The two of them as they were like going through this date longer and longer.
No, agreed. Totally. I mean, the escalator, she's like excited running up and down and she's like, you know, trips a little bit and because she's like, oh, what are you drunk? On the Ferris wheel or the merry-go-round. They're like, are you drunk?
Dude, if there was like, a Ferris wheel there, man, Jesus.
Yeah, that'd be nuts.
Kiss at the top of the Ferris wheel.
I probably hadn't been inspected in a while, so I probably wouldn't ride that bit.
I wouldn't go on it either.
So they have another conversation while they're in the merry-go-round. You know, do you really think you can liberate this place? She's like, yeah, but Ellie's saying, hey, why don't you stay here in Fedra and we can liberate it together? We can change the world just from here. Again, there's no really conclusion at the end of the conversation. They just move on to wonder number three, the photo booth. She goes, is that a time machine? I just, so funny because of course, like we look at it and we're like, oh yeah, photo booth. And she's like, what? I don't know what that is. Adorable. I mean, adorable scene. No matter who you are, this has got to be cute.
Super cute.
I love that. She came with the $5 and she was like, oh, like, did you do this before? She was like, no, I was waiting to do it with you. I was like, oh, my God, you like
but
her.
She couldn't wait to do Mortal Kombat. Can't. You see Mortal Kombat, you got to put some coins in and play right away.
Yeah. Were you guys like so fucking excited about that or what? Jimmy is a Mortal Kombat boy. The amount of times we watched that movie growing up was so insane. I didn't watch Disney movies and things like that.
Yeah,
we watched Mortal Kombat
over and over and over.
Fun fact, that Mortal Kombat is like 60-minute runtime, like the entire movie, including credits. So this episode is like longer than that movie.
That's crazy. I don't know the last time I watched it as an adult, but I do know that last time I watched it, I still knew like every single word.
Oh, those are $500 glasses, you asshole. Is that the line?
Yeah, it's a line.
Hell yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Even Kathleen learned the words.
She watched them with me.
Question for you, James.
Sure.
I don't remember Mortal Kombat being highlighted this much in The Last of Us games. Was that a thing? Because we saw a Mortal Kombat machine in the gas station in like episode 2 or 3 or whatever.
And that is the callback where she says, oh, didn't she say like Riley right. or my old
yeah,
friend
yeah, yeah,
love
yeah.
that?
She even talks about Melina.
She said my friend would die if she saw this. I don't remember Mortal Kombat being talked about in the game that much. I don't even know if are you allowed to as Naughty
that's
Dog?
That's what I was thinking. Yeah, because it seemed kind of important to the story going on this episode. Like they went into the arcade. I'm not sure if that's in Left Behind the game or if they just added it for the show or what. Maybe it was a completely different game but still a fighter. I don't know. Right. Just a question I thought.
Yeah, no, I mean honestly, like we said, we both were rooks. We have no idea, but it could have just been an arcade game they were playing when the zombie wakes up and hears them yelling and freaking screaming.
I kind of just thought it's bizarre seeing a prominent video game franchise highlighting another prominent video game franchise from a different developer. Naughty Dog didn't do Mortal Kombat. No way. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was taking it as they were using it as a tool to nail down the time period.
Oh my gosh. We're idiots. HBO has Mortal Kombat the movie. They did the new Mortal Kombat.
Oh, did they? I didn't even realize they did the new Mortal Kombat.
HBO. It's on HBO. I think it was one of those ones that went like direct release to HBO.
Oh, it was an HBO Max direct. Yeah, I believe it was. I don't know if it was theaters and Max at the same time, whatever. Outside the scope of this conversation. But yeah, that is that's funny.
I always really enjoy in stuff like this how useless money is. Like the dollars on the ground. She's like, I don't want that shit. I mean, coins.
Yeah.
It's so funny. And it's like when the world ends, all the money in the world you have, it does not fucking matter anymore.
Right.
You know, it's just so bizarre.
I got a kick of how it must have been a novelty feeding that dollar bill into the photo booth. Like,
yeah,
I have my bill. Here we go. Let's do the whole thing.
Let's see this machine like eat my bill. Yeah.
It's like a ticket. It's pointless.
I was just like, I mean, I'm glad that the picture didn't come out that great because I was like, mm-hmm. this freaking thing, everything is working. It's been so long. Everything is working for them. And, you know, I'm expecting the money not to go in, but, you know, you have to give them that iconic scene. So let's just make the picture not that great and say it's just a little bit old.
And not all the machines worked, too, is the other thing. Right. Like they got lucky with the MK.
I also just want to give Riley's character a shout out because while she may not be making all the best choices in the world, like when Ellie looks at her and is like, you plan things, sweetest moment ever. And then walking her through all these things and Riley spent an hour trying to get the coins out of the machine yesterday and setting all this up and making sure everything was perfect because she loves her best friend and it's her last night. And she's probably just as devastated, you know, like having to tell her all this. So I just thought that was so sweet. And I'm glad that Riley took care of our girl for at least one first date with the love of her life as of late. But
it's adorable. She cares so much. She wanted to make this a super date for you other How Many Mother fans out there.
Wow. Tally them up.
This was a super date without a doubt. I mean, this was incredible. I love the line that Ellie has where they're just looking at the arcade and she goes, Riley, yeah, this is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen.
Like
that's just, dude, it's just beautiful.
Seriously, though, can you imagine if you've never seen something like that because you were born in a zombie apocalypse and the gloominess of the world and just every single light opens up and you see a video game paradise, like, woo, living the dream.
Oh, I couldn't even imagine. Like, she couldn't imagine it. So then she sees it and she's like, this is mind blowing. Mm-hmm, again, the limitless supply of quarters, just best day in the world. While they're playing this, we already talked about it, but we do get a glimpse of the infected in the creepiest store in the mall possible, in the store that sells all the dolls.
That's apparently from the game. Somebody shouted that out on TikTok. I saw that's a scene from the DLC. So props to them again.
Let's talk about that clicker because if
he's not a clicker, flies, he's right?
a runner.
He's an infected, right?
So
or is he that middle ground?
Yeah. An intermediate between a runner and a clicker called a stalker that has the severe like fungal coming out of the skull like a clicker does, but not so severe. When the infection covers the eyes, I believe is the distinction because clickers cannot see. That's why they click. Rudimentary sonar or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
These stalkers have the speed, agility, and power of runners, but they're not hindered by being blind.
So my big issue with this is like Marlene, and they talk about it later. Ellie says, you were stationed here, weren't you? And obviously Riley has been staying there. And Marlene put a 16-year-old girl in this mall that they didn't check every corner an inch of. I'm like, this guy is just like plastered to the wall for probably years and you didn't find this guy. And they were making a ruckus. Like he was probably like, I'll let you go if you shut up. And then he was like, all right, last straw.
He's like,
I'm coming.
He's like,
oh
trying
my gosh.
Guys, trying to sleep here. Trying to sleep. Don't make me call the cops. All right, fine. I'll kill you both.
Yep.
Stop dancing. You're done.
Well, I mean, that's where it gets to the point where I was actually confused or maybe saying, I don't want to say plot hole, but we obviously see the person, the infected against the wall in episode one with Joel and Tess, or if that's episode two, I'm not sure anymore, but they're just assuming that thing's game over. You could tell it's like stuck to the wall. Everything is just like plastered to the wall.
Yeah. You said it's dry.
I don't know if these people, meaning the Fireflies, saw it like that. I mean, I'd stick freaking something in its head just in case, but I don't know if they saw it and said, oh yeah, that's game over for that one. But at the same time, I don't remember in the game, and I don't remember them bringing up the fact that there could be like dormant infected, like just waiting for you, and then like you can wake it up out of a slumber to come get you. But it's just like the storytelling, and I'm gonna allow it, but it was just a little too perfect for them to fit it right in.
I actually have something about too perfect later on. We'll get to it when we get there. But the way I've been taking it is they have the one conversation where they said, you know, how long do the infected live? And they're like, you know, some live you know, like a few years, some live 20 years. So right. I feel like the disease affects everybody differently. So it's hard to pin down, you know, how long has this guy been sitting here? It could have been, you know, a month or two, or it could have been like years, like you guys been saying. It's so that's the way I've been taking it, at least. Like everybody who gets infected, like you're not destined to become a clicker. Like you might die from the infection randomly before you become a clicker.
And there's, and this goes back to the Henry and Sam thing where, Brian, you were cracking me up where it's like, yo, chill out when they're like screaming on the street and stuff. I don't care if you swear to me that you cleared the building. I wouldn't be screaming. I wouldn't be banging on the arcade. I wouldn't be like clapping hands and all this stuff. I would be quietly.
Use your indoor voices. Indoor voices.
Saying, oh my gosh, you have Raven. Or Raiden, I'm sorry. A Raven from the 100, guys. We cover the 100. Jesus.
Oh my God, but fatality.
No. Oh my God, you just used Baraka's fatality. That was phenomenal. Like something like that, you know? And then just quietly.
I will totally say, though, that is an Ellie-specific character trait that she... Almost like Alki, no filter, just right when it's in her head, she's going to say it, and it's going to be the volume that she intends to say it at. Which I was mad. She's done that, but Joel has been like, yo, shut up before in this show.
Henry and Sam, you know, after they get to the other side, Henry's like, you know, oh my God, look at this, and she's talking loud. Even before that with Joel and Tess, she's like, oh my God, outside, and they're like, yo, shut up. So at least the show's been consistent with it. And I do kind of like that we got that in the flashback. We got Riley. I'm sorry. We got Ella. Oh, my God. We got Ellie yelling at Riley as soon as she comes in. And Riley's like, yo, shush. So like you are saying, Brian, it is a consistent character trait that she has. To get back to the arcade, Ellie's like, you know what? I got to go. I can't do this anymore. But I got you a gift. Well, if you got me
wait. Why does she have to go? Because it looked like it was going to happen, but then she kind of changed the subject, Riley meaning, and then Ellie's like, she doesn't like me. I got to get out of here. You're breaking my heart. Don't you dare gloss over that, Paul.
Okay, sorry, because that is big. That's big because that happens again later on in almost senior two. So she brings her, Riley brings Ellie to where she's been staying, gives her the no pun intended T-O-O. She couldn't be more excited. They immediately go into it. And then Riley's saying, I love the line. What is it? What does a computer do to get drunk?
Take screenshots. What's
a screenshot?
Screenshot.
Yeah.
Perfect. Love it. And as Riley is looking for one, Ellie's looking around the room, sees the bomb. Riley doesn't say the punchline, but she gets out. What do you call an alligator in Invest? Do you guys know what it is?
Oh, wait. What do you get? What? Say it again. What do you call an alligator?
What do you call an alligator in a vest? An investigator.
Yeah, I have.
Damn it. I'm sorry. Nice. I should have given you two
did
more
you
seconds.
Did you look that up, Paul, or did you just answer
it
yourself?
Up. I'm not as smart as
Kathleen. Just freaking called it out.
Investigator.
You know what's
a good one?
Incredible, though, is I looked it up today, which is, what is it, Tuesday, 2 days after this episode aired. And as soon as I typed in, what do you, the first autofill that came up is call an alligator in a vest, because everybody else that watched the show was
Googling
like, what the fuck do they call it? So it was just
there. That's funny.
Yeah, well, the fight ensues.
Yeah.
You know, it's not good. Yeah. She tells her that she's going to Atlanta. You know, she's getting reassigned, and Ellie freaks out and storms off. And I just got to say, man, I feel this, Ellie. Ellie's storming off and then deciding, never mind, and turning around is me. Like, anytime I've ever tried to storm off in my life, I'm like, nope, no, I don't like that. I love that. But then the spirit of Halloween screams start happening anyway.
Yeah.
And it was so funny. Like, I loved that little twist because I'm telling you right now, anybody could take me to a spirit of Halloween in current day, and I'd be like, let's get married. I fucking love spirit of Halloween.
Okay.
The best store ever.
Anybody think those screams were going to be Riley? Because I was thinking she would have left it. Oh my gosh. It completely got me.
It was so good. And I love when she was like, I saved this for last because I thought you'd like it the most because Ellie's such a little freak just like me. I love it. You love the spooky stuff. It's so funny.
She thought the dead body was a surprise. So she got excited about that. So, of course, she would get excited about this Halloween story. And I do want to go back to it right before they get into the Halloween store. Ellie and Riley, while they're fighting, Riley reveals, you know, Marlene, I asked if you could come with me, and Marlene said no. And I'm like, what the fuck, Marlene? So you're telling me all this is your fault? If you just said yes, Marlene, we're good. Riley and Ellie are alive. You know, they're on their way as fireflies, but nope, all Marlene because she said no.
Well, given her new viewpoint on life, would she have just went with Riley and the Firefly so quickly, even if Marlene did give it the green light?
Yeah, I don't think she would have went. I don't think she would have either.
Yeah.
I just want a happy ending.
Yeah. And going back to the misdirect though, Brian, it was funny because again, it's one of those things. They do it all the time. You know the ending before, you know, before you even start the episode, and you're just waiting for it to happen. And I'm saying, Jesus, add to the devastation if after Ellie runs away after a fight, that's when Riley dies.
Yeah. That was their last words. Yeah.
Whoa. Like that. And that's where I was like, this is it. This has to be it. And then they get 100%. Us with the Halloween thing and it's hilarious.
Can I?
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, mine's a quick little thing. Mine is, can you imagine that, like, they live in a world with actual scary monsters and they walk into a Spirit of Halloween with all these masked monsters and they're like, great, people were playing pretend before. Now look at the world we're living in. Like,
look at these pretend zombies on the wall. Yeah, that's real now.
Even Ellie was like, exactly. What the fuck? So,
well, Riley, even they can find the humor in it, though. And I do just want to bring up, because I think it happened in the scene where she gave her the pun book, we found out that not only is Riley there alone, but she was tasked with guarding the Firefly's arsenal of explosives. That just adds to the plot hole. How are the Fireflies leaving Riley alone with an entire mall, the arsenal of explosives? Plot hole.
Agree.
Well, I don't know. It's not nearly a plot hole out of necessity, right?
True that.
Because they're like, the Fireflies are, they're scrapping for any volunteers that they can get. And they're like, all right, let's just hold this stronghold down. I know it's like a
different world and you have to have a different viewpoint because you're like, I don't want to say desensitized, but you're desensitized to infected after 20 years or however long you're living. So 16, 14 for Ellie and Riley. But I don't know if you could convince me to just sleep in that mall by myself when you know that it was previously filled with infected. It's just sketchy as hell, but
at least go in a closet or something with a door. She's just like chilling in the open kitchen.
I don't know what I would do, but I would make sure that's, I'm just not chilling in the open. I'll tell you that right now.
I was just going to kick us into this sweet moment. So
the sweet moment,
Ellie runs in and Riley's just sitting on the ground. And they have a sweet moment where Ellie's coming to terms with it. And Riley talks about how the Fireflies give her a sense of family that she hasn't felt since her own family. And I love that Ellie was like, you meant something to me first, which really sweet. I mean, amazing. Riley is Ellie's family at this point. And the you're my best friend and I'll miss you line and Ellie saying, I'm not being a bitch when I say okay. Like, I truly mean like okay, and
right,
you're my
right,
best friend,
right.
I'll miss you. And that's the dance it out scene. But I mean, any thoughts and comments before?
It's just so weird and goofy. I mean, it's just them dancing with this weirdest mask they could find on. That's like the most Ellie thing I could think of.
It's cute.
And they're just thinking about how happy they are. And that's when Ellie takes off the mask.
Yeah.
The strongest glass ever that they're jumping on top of. But that's hey. As if the glass broke, they wouldn't have had the chance to kiss. It would have ruined the moment. So I'm glad the glass stayed for them. Happy for them.
But how good of a short exchange was this, though? I mean, they take off the mask. Mm-hmm. Ellie's basically like almost crying, says, don't go. Riley says, okay. And then they kiss. Like, it's so real life.
So there, and it's Paul, like, there's your happy ending. Like, they decided, it seems like, Riley was saying, I will stay.
Yeah. Yes.
Now, I don't know how that works because obviously I don't know if she can go back to Fedra after being gone for 3 weeks and being a Firefly. She might still have to somehow be a rogue Firefly and not go to Atlanta. I don't know. But
that
she could throw the Fireflies under the bus. She'd be like, yo, Fedra, can I come back if I give you some good information?
Sounds like I'm that's the only one of the four, but I got the impression Riley was just telling her what she needed to hear for this night to remain the perfect night.
I didn't get that at all, but it totally could be.
I see both sides, to be honest, but I actually rewound it because I wanted to rewatch the scene where she's saying that, because at first I was like, wait, did she just say she's going to stay? Even though obviously I knew she's going to die anyway, but yeah. Either way, sad.
Doesn't really freaking matter because the stalker was standing outside waiting
He's like, oh, that's kind of nice. And now,
they're happy. They're happy. They're the happiest they've been all night. Okay, I'm going to go in and ruin it. So he goes in and ruins it. Fight breaks out. Ellie kills it, but not before they both sustain a bite. Pretty much game over. Cue the stage one of stage five of grief. Which is denial. Right. And
game over, man.
Off.
Game over.
Game over.
And there's
man.
The broken glass for you, Jimmy.
Yeah.
Ellie's
so
not.
This is it's an interesting choice again, because it's this scene where they look at the bite marks that they jump back to Ellie and Joel at present time. And again, it's an interesting choice to chop it up that much. So it's almost to the point where they jump back because now Ellie is faced with the same decision with Joel that she had to face with Riley, which is you're on death's door. What can we possibly do right now?
Right. Am I going to leave you behind? Am I going to run or am I going to stay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in Riley's words, they have two options. One, easy way out, you know, shoot themselves in the head, or two, you know, keep on going. We don't quit. If it's 2 minutes or 2 days, we don't give any of that time up, which is a good line. We can be all poetic and shit and lose our minds together. Another good line.
Yeah.
But how do you feel about this choice?
Because I am an easy way outer. I'll tell you that much right now.
Me too.
I know I'm not turning into a bloater. Because this is just a little teeny bite. I'm going to be an infected. Like, nah, if I'm a bloater, maybe I'll stay and just F some people up. But
be the king of the infected. But I wasn't even thinking of that. We're watching this episode and they say that and it's a cute line. But Emily looks at me and is like, yeah, that's good. Become part of the problem. Like you could immediately go on and just infect like other people. So I was like, for the sake of humanity, kill yourselves. But if they did that, Ellie would never know.
My thoughts were what Riley meant was we go until we're turning and then we do it. Like the easy way out is put a gun in your mouth right this moment. What I thought is, okay, as soon as the other one starts turning, you got to fucking do it. You know what I mean?
We know our girl Tess. All of a sudden, you're going to start making out with clickers and shit if you start turning. You don't have your mind. You don't have enough mind. I guess she did have that final second to blow up the building. So that could have been a thing. There was so many things racing in my head. Like I was like, oh my God, is this going to be like where Riley, they decide together, they're going to end it quick. Like choose option one. And then Riley kills herself, but then Ellie can't. And that's why she sees Riley kill herself in front of her. And then she thinks she's like not strong enough to do it or she can't do it. And then, oh, that's how she finds out she never changes. Like, I'm just thinking of all these millions of things, and obviously we don't get the answer, and we have to assume that if Joel makes it, they have to have they haven't had a conversation yet about Riley, and maybe it's not going to be Joel if he doesn't make it. Maybe it's Tommy, whoever, but she has to talk to somebody about Riley. We really haven't had anything come up except, you know, I've had some loss. She talked to Marlene for a second when Marlene says, oh, is Riley a bad person, when she brings up that Riley was a Firefly. But we haven't had, you know, the Joel and Sarah talk and the Ellie and Riley talk. And I would like, if that talk happens with whoever it happens with, to get a little flashback right back to where they were to see what they have to do, whether it's Riley changes and then Ellie has to take her out, which is a weird way to say it. Like, you just like take her out
after,
man. But
after Riley just took her Ellie out all night.
Yeah, she took her out to town. But yeah, I mean, or is it that like she just watches her change and then she runs away because she's scared? Or I don't know.
I'm starting to think she takes her out. Honestly, yeah, I'm convincing myself.
How devastating is it? That's what I brought up earlier in the episode. She says she killed, and Paul, that could easily be the answer, that it was the stalker that she killed, because that was her first kill. I mean, she said she's never seen a dead body before. So in her first night, she sees a dead body. Well, she also kills somebody. That could be easily the answer. But story purposes, devastating if you say that you have to kill Riley.
Well, it's crazy because the last scene we get is literally Ellie saying, what's option three? Riley says, I don't know. And then Ellie cries and puts her head on her shoulder, and that's all we get. So I'm hopeful we'll get something, because I'm on the same boat. Ellie's not going to turn, so she's going to slowly see Riley turn. Riley's probably going to attack. Ellie's probably going to have to take her out. I hope we get that. It's heartbreaking as it is.
And that's
or
part
at
of
least,
the friendship.
Or at least her explaining it. Tell me you did it. Tell me that's what happened. Oh, I just want to know. Yeah.
That would be pretty crazy if they just left us guessing. But in my eyes, that's part of the friendship. If I saw Paul starting to turn, I'd be like, I'm not letting my homie be a zombie for the rest of his life. No, he's going to die on his own terms or my own terms at this point.
Yeah,
that's an
obligation. I don't want that to be the last image.
Yeah. And while it's devastating, it is almost a relief. I don't know. It's taking pity on them, whatever you want to call it. It's not pity would not be the word. It's
mercy.
Helping them out. Mercy. Yeah. It's like,
yeah.
She's going to kill Riley. And I do hope we get to see it. And considering how heart wrenching this show has been so far, I think they're going to make us watch. Watch it, you idiots.
I think HBO. that scene that they're not giving us is probably also really big in affecting Ellie's decision right here, which is, I'm not going to watch Joel die because I already watched Riley die slowly. Mm-hmm, so I'm going to do everything I can to save him. She goes around ravaging the cabinets and closets, and she finally stumbles upon needle and thread. When she comes back, she starts going to work on good old Daddy Joel. And they kind of hold hands for a second, and light guitar music starts playing. And I'm like, I'm either reading way too into this or it's just coincidental. But like the light guitar music, I was like, I know you guys talked how Joel was a big guitar player. Like, he was a musician. This is like a really touching Joel moment. I wonder if this is like anything to do with that or just guitar. And Paul, you're fucking being an English teacher, reading too much into it.
It's the dumb waiter.
That's pretty much
Bill House, man.
The dumb waiter. Always goes back to the dumb waiter every time. I love it.
But yeah, that's it. That's it.
Yeah, you gotta save Daddy Joel. Gotta.
A couple
save
things
him.
That I want to ask the Rooks.
Ask me.
Kyle's not on, but Kyle did say that he had that sinking feeling that we won't know until episode 8, Joel's fate. Now, my first question is, which I asked Dave last episode, did you two watch the trailer?
I have written down right after that last scene, that's the episode, I'm no Dave, so I didn't stick around to watch what's on next week.
Yeah, Brad, you're not a rat is more like it. I love you, Paul. You guys are great. Thanks, Rooks. I love you too, Kathleen.
I watched it.
Oh, my God.
I didn't listen to the last two coverage episodes. I listened 1 through 4. So if there's slander on watching the next week on, didn't know about it because
I didn't
listen to 5-6.
One of our episodes or one of our shows we covered, Brian went on his rant, which was definitely had a lot of merit to it, of why trailers aren't great, because especially Last Kingdom? I don't know what it was.
It was either Last Kingdom or an MCU show.
Whatever it was very, very, like, it was giving spoilers without, like, giving spoilers. So I remember we were covering it on the pod, and Brian was like, well, Don't ask me that question because I know the freaking answer because I saw the trailer, which sucks because it was like a big question. So we've been joking for a long time since then, you know, no trailers. And especially, I haven't said anything about it until last episode because it's like I wanted to know if you guys checked the preview out to see if Joel was going to be in it. But either way, we're not going to know about Joel. But my question to the Rooks is, does this scene with her stitching him up bring him out of the woods to you guys, or is there still the possibility that he is dying for next episode?
That would be nuts. I mean, I think it's still in the air. Like, just because she's trying to save him doesn't mean she'll definitely save him. But like the real world aspect of it, you know, I didn't see any alcohol solution disinfecting that was a big old gash. What are the actual chances you survive? So in a weird way, I can see Joel living for like a little bit, but not actually like surviving. Like, he is going to succumb to this wound. Finally, he might live on for like a few more days or something. And be in the
would that
episode.
Be in this season though?
That he would die? Yeah, I could see him dying at the end.
So last episode, when we watched six, me and my girlfriend, it ended and I was like, you know, he's not dying. And Alex looked at me and was like, he's dying. And I was like, what do you mean? Like, to me, it wasn't even a possibility. Pedro Pascal is everything to the show. Him and Bella.
Whoa.
Are,
okay. Well,
no,
Bella,
no, no.
Yeah.
I'm saying, like, to me, I don't play the game. So The Last of Us game two, like being a lot of Ellie, doesn't mean anything to me. I didn't know that. You know what I mean? Like, to me, the game is you're both of them and you're trying to get Ellie to whatever, you know, I don't know. And she was my girlfriend was literally like, no, he's dying. He's dying. And I go, what do you know that I don't? What did you read? What did you watch? What spoiled you? And she was like, no, I just really have a gut feeling that he's dead.
A gut feeling.
We like were mad at each other.
Got it right in the gut.
Because I was like, where is this coming from? Like, I was like mad at her for thinking.
Yeah. How dare you say he's dying?
Just a defensive Pedro Pascal fan over here.
Yeah, absolutely. She had every right to think that. And I was like, how dare you? Honestly,
it's a weird situation because you're thinking you're watching it as a show, but in the back of your mind, you know, it is a successful video game that has a sequel. So, you know, it's got to have a good ending to the first game, but still have enough to somehow set up for two. So it's hard to just watch the show and come up with theories without being at least somewhat biased by the knowledge that there is more to it, right? Because I'm like, from a marketing standpoint, would they sell if Joel wasn't in it? And it's like, I shouldn't be fucking thinking about that. I should just be watching the show and guessing. So I want Joel to live because, I mean, like, how are you going to... That's like,
yeah, why wouldn't you want the homie to live?
Yeah, like you said, Kathleen, he's the face of the show. He's half of the face of the show. So I don't know. I
show
want
me
him
the
to
gross
live.
Half of your face, dude.
I don't think he's 100% of the show us the gross half of your face so I can go home. Oh God. Family Guy references too. But yeah, I don't know. I am so ready for this next episode, not only because we're going to get Joel again, but because Brian got me excited at the beginning of this recording by saying he's excited for the next episode. So I'm ready.
We only
two more episodes.
More episodes and a decent amount of The Last of Us Part One video game material to get through. So I'm thinking it's going to be heavy just straight from the game content these last two episodes. But,
you think longer runtime?
We saw the runtimes and they're all the same. And honestly,
so damn it.
Yeah. And I was actually going to bring this up and there doesn't need to be too much talked about. It doesn't need to be talked about too much. Because again, we have two Rooks here, but for someone who's played the game, there's still a lot to go. And I don't want to say like a lot, not like five episodes a lot, but like it's going to pack in two episodes. Like I would think that I would wish it was 10 episodes. And when this episode ended, I was like, I went on Google and said, how many episodes will The Last of Us be? Knowing the answer is 9, but I just wanted to reiterate it because I was like, shit, it's not 10. We'll see how they pack it in. They've done phenomenal so far.
They have done
them
really well with pacing. So I do have to trust them at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. Any other lasting thoughts from the Rooks?
Yeah, since I may not be on the Last of Us coverage again, I just want to say what a ride. Sunday night HBOs have been like really fucking doing it. For anyone who hasn't seen Succession comes out at the end of March. So it's just going to take out. It's been the best show I've seen besides, you know, Yellow Jackets, The Last of Us in a while. So
House of the Dragon.
I binged it for the first time. Yeah, it's just been such a run, like House of the Dragon, White Lotus, The Last of Us, now Succession. It's just like it's really feeding my TV soul. But what I want to say is Bella Ramsey, they're absolutely crushing it. Episode over episode, I'm just like so proud. Our little Game of Thrones star, you know, I'm just so proud of them. And Pedro is just like so good and so hot. Like after seeing Mando and how you barely ever get to see his face, it's like just so nice. And when I'm on TikTok and my TikTok is just full of him, and I'm like, God, he's charming. This motherfucker is charming. Like, I wasn't really like a Pedro girl before because I hadn't seen much with him in besides Mando. But man, great casting. All the bullshit about the Ellie casting can absolutely suck it. I think Bella's crushing it. And I just wanted to say that on pod, on air.
Yeah, perfectly said. And lasting note here, talking about you saying Pedro has just been killing it. I've said on the pod a few times, I don't know if it was on the boys or what, but I've said like Giancarlo Esposito is just like turning. I don't know how you say it. I saw it both ways, but I've said it before, and he's basically like turning into like a legend of our generation for TV, where it's just like, holy shit, like Mandalorian, Breaking Bad, The Boys. Well, now Pedro is going to be the Last of Us, Mandalorian, Game of Thrones. Like, it's just, they're going 1v1 here on that note. I mean, Pedro's starting to kill it. And another quick sidebar before we get off this, he was joking like, oh, I'd love to join the MCU because I want to be in movies. How the hell has he not been in movies? I'm sure he's done some movies, but like, how is he not a movie star yet if he wants
Nicolas
to be?
Nicolas Cage. He was in that movie, The Unstoppable Weight of Talent or something like that with Nicolas Cage. That.
Oh my God!
Make him a movie star.
If we're all fangirling about Pedro, he actually said in an interview, like, if you could meet one person, who would it be? And he's like Nicolas Cage. But I already lived that dream. So he's the best. He is perfect Joel in my mind. I haven't played the game, so I don't know what my word has any merit or meaning. It doesn't. But I love him. I love the show.
You mean something to me, Paul?
Thanks, bro. So I can't believe there's two episodes left. I'm going to be so sad. I'm probably not going to be on the finale. So if there's any listeners here that loved my voice, thank you. Appreciate it.
It seems like at this point, we've done this for the boys. It seems like at this point, we might want to do, like, we'll do our episode 9 coverage and then maybe do a full season recap and just talk whatever the heck we want with anyone who wants to jump on from the pod, which would probably turn into all 7 of us.
All 7 at of least. Us are loving the show. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and that would be a banger as long as we make sure we don't talk over each other. So we'll see how that goes.
And we've been talking in advance. Go ahead, Paul.
Like that. Exactly. I'm sorry in advance. I had to talk to you. All I was going to say is final thoughts of the show. I love the human aspect of this. It's almost a story of humans living in a world with this infection. It's not even like a zombie movie. It's about just the life around this world. That being said, in these next 2 episodes, I want an all-out brawl. I want a war. I want bodies hitting the floor. I want Joel's kill count to go to double digits. Like, I'm so ready for like an all-out war. All right, anybody listening and not watching, all 3 just started headbanging to let the bodies hit the floor.
Yes, that's exactly what it was.
That's how Bella should be, or Ellie should be talking in the episodes.
I want to pose one last question to our 2 Rooks, and that would be, so far, what is your favorite episode and why? Just very quickly.
Fucking 3. Episode 3. Episode 3, so beautiful. It was a movie in its own right. Yeah. Didn't even need to see any other episode of the show. And I think that's why it's our favorite episode, because it was so complete from start to end. I mean,
Mm-hmm.
Can't be.
Not everything needs to be about the main characters. Like this episode and that episode paint someone else's story within this universe. And it shows, yeah, we're watching what, you know, Joel and Ellie are doing, but what are other people doing? What is like a, what is a not so terrible existence in this apocalypse? I mean, just watching Nick Offerman play that role mm-hmm. was so fun and so crazy. And it was gorgeous,
so compelling.
And yeah, of course we love a good world building moment. Anyone who hates that is just like being annoying. Sorry. Like if you don't like that episode, you're being annoying. And I feel like I can confidently say that it was just and I saw so many things about people being like, there wasn't even a single clicker in that episode. I'm like, actually he shot a clicker pretty early on in the episode. So, yeah. You know, you're wrong. But anyway, yeah, episode 3, such a banger, so good, so just weeping.
Yeah.
Oh, I bawled my eyes out. That was fun.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is why I can't watch with you guys. You guys have watch parties every Sunday? Nah, I won't be there because you'll make fun of me. Yeah.
You're not going to get any arguments from any of the four of us who have been doing this coverage. You guys have been listening. Kyle said it was like the best episode of television he's seen in years.
Yeah,
I think that episode's going to stick with a lot of people well after this show is done. And Nick Offerman is just absolutely goated after that performance because phenomenal. But yeah, I think we've covered a decent amount. James, anything more to add? No, I'm getting the double thumbs up. No. There it is. That's a wrap on The Last of Us episode 7. It was a good one. Thanks for stopping by to our two substitute rooks. They are always ready to come off the bench and just give an A++ performance. So thank you very much for hopping on to The Last of Us coverage. As always, guys, if you like what you heard, give Bingetown TV a follow on Twitter and Instagram. Visit us on BingetownTV.com and subscribe to our show on Spotify, YouTube, the Apple Podcast app, or wherever else you may find your podcast. And also, we've been talking so much Mando, Pedro Pascal. I would be remiss if I didn't bump our Mando coverage. Season 3 is dropping tomorrow. It's Tuesday right now, Wednesday tomorrow. That means we are going to be hot with our coverage of Season 3 of The Mandalorian. That should be dropping within the next 5 days, I would imagine. But yes, once again, we are Bingetown TV. And thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.